Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. No, Willard. It's Dibs and Grandy with you here on Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Coming up in about 15 minutes, Tim Kawakami of the SF Standard has been down in Santa Clara the last couple of days, catching up with Kyle Shanahan, taking in the beginning of Niners training camp. He'll join us again in about 15 minutes on the River Islands guest line, so don't go anywhere. You're not going to want to miss that conversation. I'll ask him to quickly sum up his convo with Kyle Shanahan, but it was like 35, 40 minutes long. So if you haven't listened, I do suggest giving it a listen. Just search for the TK Show on the free Odyssey app, and you'll be able to find it there. Talking a lot about a large-term strategy by Shanahan and the Niners. Talking about how this is not a rebuild. This is just a different window. That other window, it passed them by, but this is the chance for a new window, and a big part of that new window, Dibs, as you just laid out last segment, is this young defense. If they are as good as Shanahan seems to think they're going to be, then this team is going to be loads better than they were just last year.
Yeah, and you can re-enter a new window, and I guess the previous window was 21, 22, 23, where conference finals, the Rams got you. Conference finals, your quarterback's arm fell off. Super Bowl, overtime, we don't know the rules, we lose. And that was the 3 years. And then last year was, for whatever reason, I won't make excuses or give reasons. We know what happened. You went 6-11. So now you come back this year and you have 11 draft picks and your first five are all defense. And you say, all right, Debo, off you go to Washington, and I don't know if you saw his comments today, but
what'd he say?
There's been a lot of chatter around Debo, like, oh, God, he's looked slow in camp, and so he addressed those accusations about him being slow, and he basically was laughing it off, like, you know, y'all don't know what's going to happen when I get out there on the field with the Commanders, and so I think Debo's going to be one to watch. He's going to play with a chip on his shoulder, but as a Niner offense, you have no Ayuk for who knows how long. Pearsall still unable to go. Maybe Sunday he makes his return. Cowing early on now with a little bit of a small injury as well. So yeah. Offensively, you may actually need the defense to pick you up as opposed to what you've had. And I was mentioning the defensive ranks. Over the last 4 years in yards, they were 4th, 2nd, 5th, and 7th on offense. The last 4 years.
Pretty consistent.
Yeah, the offense has been, you know, top 4th in yards and in points a little bit different. And part of that is, you know, the kicker who can't kick. And, you know, your red zone last year was kind of a joke.
Oh, my God.
And I love when I bring things up and it reminds you of what you went through. And, you know,
that's
you roll your eyes and you make noises and it kind of cracks me up. But last year was a lot of those things where your kicker missed big kicks and in the red zone, you couldn't run the ball, and so you wound up struggling as a red zone offense.
Yeah, and one thing about the Commanders, as we go back to Debo just really quickly, that wide receiver room was really interesting now because they have Debo, and Terry McLaurin is one of the high-level holdouts across the NFL. Terry McLaurin, who last year was their wide receiver number one and has been for quite some time, holding out, has not been to camp so far, so that puts a little bit more of a spotlight and maybe pressure and responsibility on Debo's shoulders. We'll see how that all plays out. But what's going to be really important is the Niners' young defense. And maybe the head of that snake in terms of the young defenders for the Niners is the Niners' first-round pick back in April. And who better to get an idea of who Mykael Williams is, Dibs, than a guy who is going to be blocking him for the next month. And that is all-pro, future Hall of Fame left tackle Trent Williams. Here is Trent, who addressed the media today down in Santa Clara for the first time this training camp. His first impressions of Niner first-round pick Mykael Williams.
Mykael's a huge dude, man. You know, generally don't see guys that size on the edge. So, I mean, it sucks having a, you know, base block guys with arms, you know, long as your legs. But, I mean, I think he has a chance to be a really good player in this NFL. I think he has a chance to be dominant. He has the best coach in the league pushing him. Get to learn from some of the best guys to learn from, obviously Nick. So I'm happy to see how he turned out. You know, I think he got all the tools to be all pro.
Now, Trent's not going to, you know, disparage a rookie in his first training camp, but he didn't have to be that complimentary of him either, Dibs. That seemed like that seemed like the best things that Trent could possibly say about a rookie edge rusher.
Yeah, and he's like, it sucks. Like, I got to go up against this guy all month, and then, you know, into August, I'm too old for this. Like, come on, Kyle. Come on, John Lynch. Can you bring in somebody a little bit more handleable for me as a vet? And, you know, Trent's in camp fully for the first time in, like, 10 years, and so he's actually out there doing things. But Mykal Williams becomes a big piece of what this defense might be, because we always know, Grandy, that if you have a great pass rush, if your secondary is mediocre, well, then it becomes better because they don't have to cover for 3 and 4 seconds. If they only have to cover for 2 seconds, now you can do things a little bit differently. And also, if your front is disruptive, then the opposing offense is going to be in second and long and third and medium, and you know, you're going to have a fresher defense, and you're going to put your offense in a better spot, too.
Yeah, no doubt. And that's why the pass rush is so valuable. And I think the Bryce Huff acquisition, they got him from the Eagles, that's kind of flying under the radar. Bryce Huff is very likely not going to start. He's more of a pass rush specialist. He'll probably play when the Niners are in nickel, when they have 5 DBs on the field, when they're expecting pass, and you have Bryce Huff in there, and likely what would happen in those situations, Dibs, it's too early to know exactly how it's going to work, but the way I see it playing out is when they do have Bryce Huff in for those passing downs, you're likely going to see Mykal Williams move to the inside. And what Trent Williams is talking about there is you rarely see a dude that big on the outside. He has the ability to go in the middle of your defensive line as well, so you get a little bit of versatility from him. And, I mean, if the Niners hit on this guy, and not that he has to be Nick Bosa level immediately, like Nick Bosa was amazing as a rookie. You don't need him to be at that level, but if he's just a consistent threat on the outside and holds his own on the inside when he is there, you have Nick Bosa on the other side, obviously you're going to need some you know, contributions from the other guys that you play in the middle of that defensive line. But if Mykal Williams is half as good as Trent Williams says he's already looking, then this defense will transform before our eyes, because you get 2+ pass rushers every single snap, maybe even 3 once you get Bryce Huff in there on third downs. It's going to be difficult for offensive lines to handle that.
And you have more depth. If Mykal Williams is good and Alfred Collins comes in and he can play in the 3 technique and he can be a guy, at least on first and second down, who could be a run stuffer, and you bring in Huff on third down, you move Mykal Williams to the inside, you've got Givens, you've got Evan Anderson, you've got Okawanu, don't forget about Yetur Gross-Matos, who last year I thought he had a very good year in the role that he was playing. And if you think about when this defense was at its best, you had 7 and 8 different defensive linemen, edges, interior, a guy like Eric Armstead who could go inside and outside as needed. And so,
kind of like Mykal.
Right, and that's where this defense, if you do have depth and you also have versatility, now you don't have to worry about Nick Bosa. We're going to need 14 sacks from Nick Bosa or else we can't get home. And, you know, if you're able to bring in Huff on passing downs, and if it's, you know, 2nd and 12 and then 3rd and 9, now you've got a chance where you know they're going to throw it, and you can move Mykal inside, and you can have Huff and Bosa coming around the outside, and now your pass rush becomes, you know, much more of a multitudinal approach where it's not just, you know, you can go ahead and double Nick Bosa because you know that nobody else is going to get home.
Yeah. One more from Trent on Mykal Williams. Here is Trent when asked about who Mykal reminds him of, and you're going to want to hear this one.
Size-wise, he kind of puts you in the mind of a young DeForest Buckner. But obviously, he's a little more slight in the frame, can play the edge, can play outside, inside. You know, so in a sense, he does. But, you know, I think he has his own makeup that kind of makes him different as well. So, like I said, he's an intriguing prospect. Just watching him the first few days, he looks promising. So, just can't wait to see where he end up.
I mean, my eyes immediately open wide when I hear Trent Williams say Mykal Williams initially reminds him of DeForest Buckner. Maybe the biggest mistake of the Shanahan Lynch era was trading him away and hoping that you hit on Javon Kinlaw, which failed miserably. If you get somebody that's anywhere near what DeForest Buckner was, then you're going to be, you pair him with Nick Bosa for years to come. That defense is going to be pretty good.
Yeah. And I wonder about that as the mistake. For me, the mistake was the Javon Kinlaw piece. It was not the Eric Armstead versus DeForest Buckner part of it, because you did get a pick back, and had they hit on the pick, we wouldn't look at it as the same level of mistake. So you kept Armstead, who was good. Eric Armstead was a good player.
Yeah, not as good as DeForest.
No, but close. Close enough to where you got a first-round pick also, and had you not blown that pick, the Niners would have won the deal.
Yeah, it's all part of it, though. The decision to bet on your draft pick as opposed to, it's all...
But for me, the draft pick is the mistake, not the Armstead versus Buckner.
Yeah, but the draft pick doesn't happen if you don't give up Buckner. So it's related.
It is, but if the draft pick is somebody who actually can play and help you, then you win the deal.
Yeah, I understood the logic. It just ultimately didn't work out for him.
Yep.
Yeah, is the way it played out. All right, time for a break. When we come back, Tim Kawakami of the SF Standard, also the TK Show podcast dropped this week, his conversation before training camp with Kyle Shanahan. We will pick his brain about that and a whole lot more. Tim Kawakami joining us next. It's Willard and Dibs. Dibs and Grandy with you. And TK will join us on the River Islands guest line when we return right here on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs.
That's a great question.
It's a great question.
That's a great question.
On 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. No Willard today. It's Dibs and Grandy with you here on Willard and Dibs. And we've got a special guest joining us now here on the River Islands guest line. It is Tim Kawakami of the SF Standard. You listen to his podcast, the TK Show. It's on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. And one of his most recent episodes with head coach of the San Francisco 49ers, Kyle Shanahan, that dropped just a couple of days ago. We've been playing bits and pieces of it here on the show throughout the week. If you haven't heard the whole thing, I do recommend going and giving it a listen. Tim, thanks for coming on again. Grandy and Dibs with you. Appreciate the time. How's it been down in Santa Clara to kick off training camp?
Yeah, not too bad. I wasn't down there today. I was there yesterday, of course, and the day before that to the Shanahan Lynch presser, and then talked to Kyle afterwards. The weather's been fine, a little mild, actually not too hot. And, there's some energy there. There's a lot of young players. That's what strikes you the first thing. There's just a lot of young bodies out there, a few less familiar faces, but then some of the familiar faces are out there too. But more than anything, you see Michael Williams, you see Nick Martin, you see, C.J. West, you see all these guys. It's different. There's a different energy to it when you see younger players out there. Obviously, they have to prove themselves, though.
Yeah, they do. And I mentioned your conversation with Kyle Shanahan. It's available again on the TK Show. I'm curious what you thought was the most intriguing thing that Kyle told you. If you could just point to a single thing that you heard from him, what would that be?
I guess so. The big picture, we know what happened in the offseason. We know all the players that they lost or discarded. And for the first time, Shanahan, and I've been critical of it, and I'll still be critical of some of it, but he really put it together for me. Like, this is what they were looking at. And I've not heard them say this like this. They're basically starting another three-year cycle like they started in 2018. 2017, he and Lynch take over, and they just got to redo everything. And they didn't really think of their era starting until 18 when they started accumulating some players they really could use, build foundational players. And that launched this run from then till, let's go to the 2023 season when they get the Super Bowl again. And then it kind of busts up again in 2024 last year for various reasons. They kind of do a roster payroll cleanse. And this, to them, is the year one of a new three-year cycle. And the players that are no longer on the team, in their minds, their logic would not have helped them in year two or year three of this cycle. And maybe you don't get the Super Bowl this year, but you get a shot at doing it in year two, year three. That really made sense to me. And maybe it was logical if you looked at it, but as it was happening, I didn't feel it quite that logical, that structural. And for Shanahan to get it, put it down that clearly, I think he and Lynch kind of figured it out as a go. I don't think this was exactly the plan to start this offseason, at least to do it as dramatically as they did. Deebo Samuel, Talanoa Hufanga, Jalen Moore, Aaron Banks. And we know the names, Jordan Mason, bing, 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 all these guys, Deebo Samuel. But I think the philosophy of it, I had not really felt football wise. And just be sitting across from Shanahan, asking him about it, and him spelling it out, that he really felt it coming in the middle of the 2023 season, not last season when it all fall apart. He felt it coming in 2023. They're still going to go try to do it again in 2024 because they didn't have to pay Purdy till this year. But he felt it kind of loosening then, and last year kind of was the disruption year, and this is now year one of a new three-year cycle, or they're hoping more than 3 years. That was really interesting to me.
And when you look at this three-year cycle, Tim, and you start to take a look at the draft where five guys were drafted on defense, and you bring back Robert Saleh and you bring in Gus Bradley, a couple of veteran defensive minds, do you think that that is where Kyle Shanahan is looking to start? You've got an offense that already had some drafted players last year. Is it more about the defense this year that needs to be a part of that three-year cycle?
Yeah, I think so. That's where the restart really is, defensive line for sure. And we know how much, you know, Shanahan and Lynch value the defensive line. One of the reasons they wanted this job was because they had Armstead and Buckner already there. Now you have Bosa as kind of the foundational piece, and you got to figure out who else is around that. And yeah, I do think the refresh, the redo is mostly on defense, and he's very comfortable with Robert Saleh doing it because Saleh did it in 17 and 18 because that was not a great defense, as we know, even with Buckner and Armstead. They had to piece it together. They had to add people who could play that system. Richard Sherman was a big part of it. There were other players who were big parts of it. But, yeah, the big redo, you know, where did the team really fall apart last year? It was on the defense. It was a, you know, run defense, which is what all defenses pride themselves on, fell apart. They had guys who were not doing the job or they were hurt. And it's just logically on offense, they do have Brock Purdy as a holdover. And, you know, you imagine at 25, 26, he's only getting better. You've just paid him a whole lot of money. You still have Trent Williams. You still have George Kittle. You still have, you know, Christian McCaffrey. So they should be okay on offense, at least with the quarterback for sure, and build it out from there. On defense, you got to redo it. But this has got to happen in camp. Like, this is what they're doing, is figuring out what they got on defense and figuring out where to put it. And I agree. This is the you need the talent there. You can't just do it with straight pieces. You got to do it with the right people, and they have better have picked the right people. I think they're really talented. I mean, again, it's noticeable. Mykal Williams and Alfred Collins, 2 6-foot-5 guys on defensive line, are noticeable. You see them, and other people see them. You kind of congregate over there because there's so much size and so much speed. Can they stay healthy? Can they do it in real games? Can they stop the running back on 3rd and 1? We don't know that, but they got a shot at it with these guys. And I think that's what Shanahan feels.
Tim Kawakami with us here on Willard and Dibbs. Tim Kawakami of the SF Standard. You can hear his podcast, The TK Show. It includes a conversation with Kyle Shanahan earlier this week. You mentioned defense, obviously more questions than the offense, but the position group on offense that does have some questions is the wide receiver room. Of course, Ayuk coming back from his rough knee injury. You got a minor hamstring injury still with Ricky Pearsall. Maybe he comes off and he practices in full coming up on Sunday. But the other question is Juwan Jennings, who is looking for a contract, reworked contract, more money, more incentives, whatever it is. But he's been out there and practicing, and it's difficult for me to not think back to how this went down last year with Ayuk, who was a hold-in. How do you think this gets resolved, and is it easier for the Niners to maybe give Juwan what he wants, considering he's at practice and he's actually practicing on the field?
Absolutely. You know, I don't think anybody wanted a replay of the Ayuk thing. It was just so awkward for everybody. I think Shanahan even made a quick reference to it when we were talking about Purdy, saying, you know, some guys don't even want to listen to a number till after camp starts. And that's kind of Ayuk. Like, the frustration on some part of the 49ers with Ayuk was he's making all this noise and he hasn't even given us a number. Like, we don't even know what the number is. That's the 49ers side. I would imagine the Ayuk side might argue differently. But it was just complete at odds with Ayuk all the way through camp, all the way to the eve of the season. And we know he did not start off very well after missing all of camp. Juwan Jennings is not doing it now. Different situation. He's not a, you know, first receiver. Probably he is right now, just given the absence they've had. But more of a, you know, complimentary, very solid first down maker, kind of a tough guy receiver, which means he's very valuable. But I think him reporting, him practicing, him making plays, him being there with Purdy, makes it a lot easier for the 49ers. Like, there's a way to solve this. We know it's not going to be $20 million a year. That's not likely to happen. but they can guarantee him some money next year. They can make this a 3-year deal. They can jump up his salary. It's not that hard when the vibes are good. And Ayuk got his money last year, right? He got his money. It just happened in a very, very rough way. And I don't think anybody wanted to duplicate that. And I'll just say, if Jennings was holding in right now, I think 49ers might treat this very, very differently than they did with Ayuk. But they knew he wasn't. They like him. He likes them. This is where he should be. You just got to find a number where it works. You know, it could be like, you know, bump him up to $15 million this year from 7.5. Like that, it isn't. They have the money to do it. He's going to be worth it. And maybe you guarantee him some of that money next year. And I just think there's a way to do this. And I think he is going down that path to proving what they already think of him, that they love him and they want him on this team and they'll reward him.
And I was thinking the same thing, Tim. Like, I thought that this almost helped his leverage, the fact that he's being a stand-up guy and he's not going about it with a hold-in or a hold-out, and he's out there trying to lead a group that, let's be fair, I mean, this is a very unproven group. And if you look around the wide receiver room right now with Juwan there, who else do you have that you can even count on who might be healthy and ready to go?
It's a Marcus Robinson, but who made some plays in day one, but we know he might be suspended. Likely he's going to be suspended for the start of the season. So then you start knocking down. Ricky Pearsall's not practicing yet with a hamstring. Jacob Cowing, you know, had a hamstring pull yesterday, so he'll be out for a while. You really start knocking down the line. It gets to be fourth-round pick Jordan Watkins, who actually looks pretty good out there. We know that Shanahan is tough on rookie receivers. It's hard to tell. Is he going to stay healthy? All the questions we ask everybody. But he might be getting some time out there, guys. He might be their third wideout to start the season. You know, that's pending a DeMarcus Robinson suspension, and we don't know where Ricky Pearsall is going to be. But, man, if I had to say who might be their first receiver coming off the bench, who isn't starting – it might be Jordan Watkins. Now, that is a little scary, I'm sure, for the 49ers again, because he's a rookie. You just don't know if he can do it. But that's how thin they are right now. They sign a receiver. They sign another. They're signing receivers, but I think it's mostly just for camp reps. I don't think they're going to be counting on these guys. But who knows? If another receiver or two goes down, it could get to be – it's already pretty desperate, pending the DeMarcus Robinson situation. It could get very, very desperate because you never know who's going to be healthy, who's going to be not. And I'll just say, just the way they're talking, I don't think Brandon Ayuk is going to be suiting up, let's just say, put pads on for quite some time. I would not expect him to practice in training camp. I would not expect him to be in the preseason games. I would not expect him to be available for like at least week 1, 2, 3. I think we're talking October maybe for Ayuk and maybe even a little bit beyond that.
Tim, I'm curious, you were talking about how Shanahan walked you through kind of their plan for this offseason and what it means for this year and the opening of a new 3-year window. I think from the outside, there's a lot of opinions that this is a team that is now rebuilding, and maybe this is somewhat of a, not necessarily a lost year, but a year potentially before a year. What would you say to someone who thinks that this is a rebuilding team right now? The way that I feel, I mean, it's pretty difficult to rebuild when you have that big of a contract, you just hand it over to a starting quarterback. What would you say to someone who says this is a rebuilding team right now?
Yeah, in some ways, it's clearly not a total rebuild. As you mentioned, Purdy, Kittle, Trent Williams, McCaffrey, like they're Bosa, like they've got players who are not rebuilding players, right? They are not. They are middle of their careers, big money, top of the payroll guys. I would say that they retooled, and given this easy schedule, now I don't know if the schedule was part of their factoring. I would have gone the other way, saying we got this easy schedule. We can go 15-2 if we keep everybody. That's a pathway to the Super Bowl. They did not do that. And by the way, the Super Bowl is at Levi Stadium. I would have thought that might have had something to do. They didn't do it. Okay, I expressed my opinion on that. But they've got such an easy schedule that even getting rid of all these solid players and possibly risking some very thin position groups, and you're counting on young players who may or may not be good or may not stay healthy, they still might win 11 games, guys. Like, this is a really easy schedule. It's the easiest schedule I've ever seen the 49ers have. You're playing the NFC South, not exactly filled with powerful teams, and the AFC South, not exactly filled with powerful teams. This is set up for them to win 10 games, I think. Like, it would be really crazy for them not to win 10 games, unless Purdy gets hurt or Bosa gets hurt. Obviously, those are pending those things. If you can say that, win 10-11, get a wild card spot, maybe even threaten for the division, I you know, they're going to say, we're not rebuilding. You know, we just kind of reset this. Now, I think we'll know in our own minds they are rebuilding parts of this team. But if they hit on their defensive draft picks, if Purdy is solid, if McCaffrey stays healthy, they should be all right. And it won't be like this complete desolation of talent. They still have talent. They looked terrible last year, but that's when a lot of people got hurt. I think they're good enough to be able to say, hey, it was a reset. And then when our young players are a little older, in a year or two, it will look like 2019 looked like. I don't know that that's going to happen. I'm saying I can understand that that's their argument. Now let's see if they're right.
Yeah, the opponents had a winning percentage of 415 last year, Tim, which is, I mean, dramatically poorer than what it was the year before when their opponents had a winning percentage of about 500, but they went on to win almost 60% of their games and all the rest disadvantage they had. So I'm kind of with you. They could maybe even sleepwalk their way into 10 wins. I want to get your thoughts on the Jonathan Kuminga. I don't even know if it's a saga. I don't even know what it is, Tim. Here we are in late July, and he's yet to really come out and have resolution. And his agent yesterday on social media said our camp, and I love the use of camp, but their camp never turned down $30 million a year. Where are we with the Kuminga conundrum, as Grandy calls it?
Yeah, it continues. The conundrum continues. It's a stuck place right now, is because the Warriors aren't going to pay him $30 million a year because over a five-year deal. I don't know that it was ever offered. I know it was reported it was offered. I don't think it was, but, you know, something in that ballpark. But he doesn't fit that now because they can't for sure know where he fits with the Jimmy Butler, Steph Curry situation. But they want to maintain his value, so they're not, you know, they want to, if someone wants to trade for him, that's fine, but you have to meet what the Warriors want for him. And it's not exactly been blockbuster because, again, they can match any contract offer that he receives. Nobody has the cap space to just sign him out, right? This is a tricky situation. It's been proven to be tricky. If Kuminga had an incredible market, I think he would have been traded by now. If the Warriors were absolutely right and he wasn't worth very much, I think he would have come back on a very short-term deal by now at a lower number. It's something in the middle. In the middle, it gets tricky. So I think, you know, they're just going to have to play it out and play it. I don't know when there's an end to this, but as I said, I think going into it, and maybe going into it, I thought that he was going to be traded. I thought there would be a hotter market for him. There just wasn't. So now that there isn't much of a market that we can tell, maybe it'll heat up again. He's a very talented player. But the way it looks like, I've been saying for like a month now, like I would guess he's coming back on a short-term deal and then maybe look to be traded. Because I think he wants to be on another team. I think he does. And I think the Warriors have different opinions on this if you ask different members, but I think the consensus probably is he would be better off to be traded if they could get something back for him. That just isn't the situation right now. So you might have to wait into January or February before you can do the ideal situation. That's just the clunkiness of what this is. And maybe if he comes back on a multi-year deal that isn't breaking the bank, he plays great for the Warriors, and maybe that changes the dynamic. That is entirely possible. I think they are certainly open to that. I think Kuminga is partially open to that, but also I think he suspects that it will not turn out great for him with the Warriors. He's seen it over 4 years where he goes in the lineup and out, in the lineup and out. And I have agreed with Steve Kerr at the end. Like if he doesn't fit with Jimmy Butler, exactly, and it isn't quite fitting with Steph Curry, then what are you going to do? What are you just going to force him out there? I would not say that that's the right move. That's not even the right mentality. So it feels like there's a long, extended, drawn-out conundrum, all these words, that should end up with him maybe signing a shorter-term deal with the Warriors that allows them to be traded in January and February, and they go find a deal at that point. It'll be easier to do at that point is what I'll say. This has just been tricky because of the restricted free agency. There's no contracted deal. They got to figure out the contract. Then you got to figure out a trade. And I think, you know, most of us predicted this would get complicated. It's been complicated, and that's why it's been delayed.
No doubt. Tim Kawakami with us here on Willard and Dibs. Tim Kawakami of the SF Standard and the TK Show. Tim, before you get out of here, let's touch on the other team here in the Bay, the San Francisco Giants. We're now almost exactly a week away from the trade deadline, 3 o'clock Pacific next Thursday. Obviously, the Giants have already made the biggest trade in baseball this year in Rafi Devers over a month ago. What do you think comes at the trade deadline for the Giants the rest of the week? Do you feel like they make another move, another big move, a smaller move, or do you think Buster just says, this is the group of guys, you're going to have to make it work?
Yeah, I think likely to make a move, but I don't think they got enough to make a big move. I mean, I don't know what else they'd have to trade unless somebody is in love with one of their prospects, and we know they're not loaded there, and I don't think they're going to trade Bryce Aldridge. So, you know, I mean, I could see them getting a back-end starter. Obviously, Hayden Birdsong, you know, you don't know what you're going to get from him the rest of the season. You've been put a lot of load on Lana Roop. You know how much you can count on him. The younger pitchers might be fraying a little bit. Although Roop's pitched well recently. I could see them saying, listen, we got maybe give up our fifth best prospect for somebody's expiring contract who can fit in as a four starter. You know, how much more can they get out of even expect out of Verlander after what he's done this season? I think something like that. I wouldn't expect them to just say, we're done, we're happy. I think they'd like to make some tinkering things. If it's somebody that they've been interested in, can figure it's not going to cost them a ton and can give them, you know, eight solid starts the rest of the way, 10 solid starts the rest of the way. Even think about maybe a guy who can pitch a game in a playoff series. I think that's what they would be looking for. Now, those guys aren't just coming for nothing. So, I look around, they don't have a lot to trade. That is the point. I mean, they gave up their biggest piece in order to get Devers. And Devers has got to be, better than he's been. Again, small sample size, I'm sure. He's a very good hitter. The numbers will come. But the best I think they can get, barring some team falling in love with some player that I can't picture right now, I think it's probably to get another starter. Now, then they probably could do better at second base, but I don't know that there's anybody out there who's going to be definitely better than Casey Schmidt. So they might be about what they are, and I would think the starting pitching would be where Buster Posey is most interested if he can find it. And I don't think it's going to be any top-of-line guy. Right? I just don't think that, but somebody that they think they can plug in and give them six decent innings for the next, few months to make sure that they're not really spinning badly at one of their starting rotations. Because they have an open spot right now, right? Birdsong is in the minors. They have an open spot right now. I think they would be interested in trying to fill that.
Interesting. Good stuff, Tim. We appreciate your time as always, and we'll keep our eye on the SF Standard and the TK Show. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.
All right, there's Tim Kawakami of the SF Standard with us here on Willard and Dibs. Always great, Dibs, talking to TK, because you can just bounce around and talk about any team here in the Bay.
Touch them all, and I think that he's spot on everything and the whole idea about, the Giants. I don't think that they have any asset on the farm that they want to part with. If it's Wisenhunt and Eldridge and you don't want to part with either one of them, then what do you really have to bring in anything of a marquee level? He mentioned a possible expiring deal as a back-end starter. That could be something that pops off late. I still think that, Buster's already made his quote-unquote big move. The Kuminga conundrum, as you have called it, is, it goes on and on. And I do wonder about, I think it's August 12th would be the deadline where if you don't have a deal in place by then, I don't believe you could then trade him at the deadline, because I thought you had to have a six-month buffer.
So I looked into this, and I think for the Kuminga situation, I'll find the exact language. For the Kuminga situation, it's only a 3 month.
Okay.
So they could sign him at any point before the season and still would be able to trade him at the deadline.
Good. Yeah. All right. That at least, takes a little bit of the pressure off as far as the urgency.
But for those of us wanting a solution soon, be good news for that.
Well, it's already, we're almost through July. And we talked about June 30th when they could potentially make this happen. And then, the report from Sham Sharania today about him seeing Kuminga at a workout. And we can get into this on the other side, because it's one of my pet peeves, and we can talk a little bit about it. But it doesn't feel like Kuminga is having any real urgency around it. He's just working out and trying to get better.
For Kuminga, the trade restriction when he re-signs is 3 months or January 15th, whichever comes later.
So, okay.
Yes. January 15th or 3 months after he signs, whichever is the later date.
So as long as it would be then before, November 12th.
Which that would be in season.
So that would be to the point where, he would be 3 months after that would be past the deadline. Correct. So, as long as it happens here before the beginning of October, we should be
safe.
All set.
able to trade him before the deadline.
I mean, what are we doing? It's the end of July.
We're brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. It's Willard and Dibs, Dibs and Grandy with you, reacting to TK. There's also more sound that you're going to want to hear from Niners camp, and we do have to give you the updates, if we can really call them that, about Jonathan Kuminga and this whole situation. We'll do all that when we come back. It's Willard and Dibs here on 95.7 The Game.